Welcome to Torat Imecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Michelle Levine, and today we begin the study of the Book of Daniel with Perek Aleph, Chapter 1. To my mind, Sefer Daniel is one of the most relevant books of Tanakh for our contemporary times. In this Sefer, for the first time after becoming a nation in our land, we encounter Jews taken captive to the foreign land of Babylonia prior to the destruction of the First Temple, and we witness their trials and tribulations, their challenges to retain their Jewish identities in the face of the pressures of assimilation and the adversities of anti-Semitism. In this Sefer, the main personae, Daniel and his companions, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, are trailblazers for how to survive in exile, rising up to withstand persecution and suffering, remaining steadfast as Jews despite being driven from their homeland. Sefer Daniel divides into two main literary sections. Chapters 1 through 6 describe the experiences of Daniel and his three companions during the time of the Babylonian Empire, particularly under the rule of the first king, Nebuchadnezzar, and the last king, Belshazzar, concluding with Daniel's experiences under Darius the Mede, the Medes having conquered Babylonia, which will eventually be taken over by Persia. Chapters 7 through 12 recount Daniel's private visions through the intermediation of angels, many of which take place during the time of the narratives that are related in chapters 1 through 6. These visions have historic and momentous ramifications for the destiny of the world's nations and particularly for the future of Am Yisrael. And in these chapters, numerous cryptic time frames are revealed for the time of redemption. As such, Sefer Daniel has much to teach us about our past, present, and future. The Book of Daniel is positioned in the last of the tripartite division of Tanakh, in Ketuvim, as categorized in Masechet Bava Vatra 14b-15a. In that Talmudic section, we learn that the members of the Great Assembly, Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, who functioned as a religious institution during the time of the Second Temple, wrote, Katevu, the Book of Daniel. In light of clear indications that Daniel wrote down his private visions, as noted, for example, in Daniel 7:1, 10:21, 12:4, Yehuda Kiel and Shmuel HaKohen, authors of Dat Mikra, infer that while Daniel was responsible for much of the writing of this Sefer, notwithstanding, as the Gemara indicates, its formal compilation and codification as part of Tanakh is assigned to the Second Temple period. This Sefer is also unusual with regard to its language. The first chapter through the first three verses of chapter 2 are in Hebrew, told from the perspective of the Judean exiles adjusting to Galut exile. From 2:4 through chapter 7, it is written in Aramaic, the lingua franca of the Babylonian Empire and eventually of the Jews in exile. From chapter 8 through the end of the Sefer, relating most of Daniel's own visions, it switches back to Hebrew. At the beginning of chapter 1, we learn the circumstances and timing of Daniel's exile, along with many other captives from the Judean kingdom, as verses 1 through 6 recount selectively. Bishnat shalosh lemalchut Yehoyakim melech Yehuda, ba Nebuchadnezzar melech Bavel Yerushalayim vayatzar aleha, vayiten Hashem biyado et Yehoyakim melech Yehuda, ומקצת כלי בית האלוקים, ויביאם ארץ שנער בית אלוהיו, ואת הכלים הביא בית אוצר אלוהיו. ויאמר המלך לאשפנז רב סריסיו, להביא מבני ישראל ומזרע המלוכה ומן הפרטמים, ילדים. ויהי בהם מבני יהודה, דניאל, חנניה, מישאל ועזריה. In the third year of the reign of King Jehoiakim of Judah, King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon came to Jerusalem and laid siege to it. The Lord Hashem delivered King Jehoiakim into his power, together with some of the vessels of the house of God. And he brought them to the land of Shinar, to the house of his God. He deposited the vessels in the treasury of his God. Then the king ordered Ashpenaz, his chief officer, to bring from some of the Israelites and from royal descent and of the nobility youths. Among them from the children of Judah were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. The 19th century Eastern European commentator Malbim expounds that Nebuchadnezzar thinks he is successful because of his own prowess and pagan gods, and as such brings King Jehoiakim and the holy vessels of the Beit HaMikdash to the house of his god. But our narrator apprises us, it is Hashem who controlled the successes of his expedition. We learn in 2 Kings chapter 23 that the Judean king Jehoiakim ruled for 11 years. According to modern chronology, he ruled from 609 to 598 BCE. While the first temple will not be destroyed until many years later, during the time of Tzidkiyahu in 586 BCE, the exile of these Kelim vessels already signals that the divine decree for destruction has been set into motion. Babylonia is described here as the land of Shinar, an archaic name. This name recalls the episode in Bereshit chapter 11, when everyone united to build a tower up to the heavens, to make a name for themselves, and Naaseh lanu shem. For Nebuchadnezzar, the first king of the Neo-Babylonian Empire, also has his grandiose plans, prideful and arrogant, to want to establish his world empire. As Malbim interprets, Nebuchadnezzar commands his chief officer to bring three groups of captives from Judea, lay people, those of royal lineage, and from the nobility, and to select out from among them Yeladim, youths, who will be indoctrinated and trained to serve in various capacities in his royal court. The 12th century commentator Avraham ibn Ezra speculates that these youths were about 15 years old. Verse 6 therefore clarifies with a singular verb, Vayhi vahem mibnei Yehuda, that from among all the youths, four individuals, that is, Daniel and his three companions, were from the royal lineage of the house of David. Nebuchadnezzar is a savvy king, and as Babylonian records attest, quite an educated king as well. From among his captives in this initial siege on Jerusalem, Nebuchadnezzar especially wants to subjugate those from the royal lineage to prove their impotence against his sovereign power. If Daniel is about 15 years old at the time of his exile, then he was born in the time of King Yoshiyahu, around 620 BCE. Yoshiyahu was the last king of the righteous Judean kings. We learn in 2 Kings chapter 22 that when a Torah scroll was found and Yoshiyahu read about the consequences of idolatry, he repaired the Beit HaMikdash, destroyed idolatry, revived the national Korban Pesach, despite being told by Huldah the prophetess that Bnei Yisrael would have to be punished. Captive in the Babylonian royal court, Daniel can draw from this role model righteous king, for he has a great legacy and lineage to uphold. And the challenge for him will be how to maintain his Jewish pride and commitment to Torah and mitzvot when subjugated to the forces of oppression and acculturation in the confines of the Babylonian palace. But there are conflicting contexts within Tanakh regarding the fate of the King Jehoiakim himself in this first siege on Jerusalem and concerning the timing of this first siege. The first verse in the book of Daniel stipulates that Nebuchadnezzar besieged Jerusalem in the third year of Jehoiakim's reign. However, we learn in Yirmiyahu 25:1 that the first year of Nebuchadnezzar's kingship over Babylon was the fourth year of Jehoiakim. Furthermore, in 2 Kings 24:1, we are informed that during Jehoiakim's reign, without specifying a time frame, Nebuchadnezzar attacked, which resulted in Jehoiakim serving him for 3 years as an Eved, a vassal king under Nebuchadnezzar in Judea. And only after these years, at some point, Jehoiakim rebels against him. Two other relevant contexts to note. In 2 Chronicles chapter 36, we are also told that Nebuchadnezzar attacks during Jehoiakim's reign without a time frame specified, and that the Judean king is bound up in chains to be brought to Babylon. Vayasreu benechushtaim leholicho bavela. Yet, as Yirmiyahu 22:19 prophesied about Jehoiakim, he shall have the burial of a donkey, for he will be dragged out and cast aside by the gates of Jerusalem. How do we reconstruct the chronological timeline? We will follow Radak in his commentary on 2 Kings 24:1-2 and 2 Chronicles 36:6. Radak is David Kimchi, the 12th to 13th centuries Spanish Provençal commentator. And we will also follow Avraham ibn Ezra on Daniel 1:1. These commentators reconcile. Nebuchadnezzar began the siege of Jerusalem in the third year of Jehoiakim's reign, but only completed it in the fourth year of Jehoiakim's reign. Scholars have noted, based on Babylonian chronicles, that in the course of Nebuchadnezzar's military expeditions, his father Nabopolassar died, and he returned to Babylon to be coronated king in 605 BCE. During this time, we also learn in Yirmiyahu 46:2 that Nebuchadnezzar triumphs over Paro Necho at the Battle of Carchemish on the Euphrates. This is highly significant, since Egypt had supported the previous empire, Assyria, and with this defeat begins the Neo-Babylonian Empire. Therefore, in the first year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign, Jehoiakim is exiled and chained in chains to Babylon. And this is when Daniel and other captives are exiled along with him, together with some of the holy vessels. But the commentators speculate that Jehoiakim only remains for a short time in captivity. He is returned to the Judean throne as a vassal king and serves Nebuchadnezzar for 3 additional years. When he rebels, apparently aligning with Egypt against Babylonia, Nebuchadnezzar then returns and attacks Jerusalem once again, killing Jehoiakim, his body dragged through the streets of Jerusalem. Why is this timeline so important for us to keep in mind? Rav Yigal Ariel, in his illuminating book Mor v'Hadas, enlightens us that this must be associated with Yirmiyahu's prophecies about the prescribed limit for this first exile. As Yirmiyahu stipulates in 25:11-12, which he reiterates in chapter 29, V'hayeta kol ha'aretz hazot lechorba leshama, ve'avadu ha'goyim ha'ele et melech bavel shivim shana, Vahayachim lo'ot shivim shana, efkod al melech bavel ve'al ha'goyahu ne'um Hashem, et avonam, ve'al eretz kazdim, ve'samti oto l'shimimot olam. This whole land shall be desolate ruin, and these nations shall serve the king of Babylon 70 years. It shall happen, when 70 years are accomplished, that I will punish the king of Babylon, and that nation, says Hashem, for their iniquity, and the land of the Chaldeans, and I will make it desolate forever. What is the starting point of this 70-year time frame? If it is assumed that it begins with the first year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign, many years before the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash, then with the first year of Daniel's exile to Babylonia, the countdown of the timetable of exile begins. Indeed, as we will see in chapter 9, this is Daniel's presumed calculation. And then when the Babylonian Empire crumbles and the Jews are not redeemed, he becomes distressed and anguished. What is Nebuchadnezzar's agenda of acculturation for his Judean captives? In verse 4, Nebuchadnezzar commands to find youths who have certain qualifications. Yeladim asher ein bahem kol mum, v'tovei mar'eh, u'maskilim v'chol chokhmah v'yodei da'at, u'mevinei mada, v'asher kuach bahem la'amod b'heichal ha'melech, u'lelamdam sefer, u'leshon kazdim. Youths without blemish, handsome, proficient in all wisdom, knowledgeable and intelligent, and capable of serving in the royal palace, and to teach them the writings and the language of the Chaldeans. These youths must be of good appearance without any defect, which reminds us of sacrifices that can have no mum. Perhaps because these exiles are this king's sacrifices. They must have intellectual capacities and a talent and aptitude to learn quickly. For as we learn in verse 5, they will only be going to Babylonian school for 3 years. Further, as Rashi explains, they must restrain from laughing, talking, sleeping, or even relieving themselves, so that they can stand a long time to serve the king. They must assimilate by learning the literature, culture, and language of the Babylonians. But the king wants even more control over them. As verse 5 narrates, Vayeman lahem ha-melech devar yom biyomo, mipatbag ha-melech umiyein mishtav. The king determined their daily diets, devar yom biyomo, which Malbim presumes changed each day. Malbim notes further that the king specified the menu in order to ensure maximum effectiveness in their training and to sharpen their intellects. What was their menu? For one, patbag, which Rashi points out is not a Hebrew word and does not refer to bread. It means royal honorific food, fit for a king's table, most probably cooked foods. Scholars note that it is parallel to the Persian word patibaga, which means food from the royal table. And second, they were to drink wine, which the king drank. In addition, we learn in verse 7, the chief officer assigned them new names. Vayasem lahem sarasarisim shemot. While Daniel and his 3 companions each have names ending in a reference to Hashem, These new names were meant to invoke the Babylonian gods. Daniel is renamed Belteshazzar, Bel being the head of the Babylonian pantheon. Hananiah and Mishael are called Shadrach and Meshach, apparently references to the moon god Aku. And Azariah is renamed Aved-Nego, referencing the god of wisdom, Nebo. We know from other places in Tanakh that a change of names represents a change in status or condition. When Yosef is promoted by Paro, his name is changed to Tzofnat Ba'aneach. Indeed, this is only the first of many parallels to Yosef, which we will point out, highlighting the correlation between Jews who are challenged to retain their Jewish identity while in exile. How does Daniel react to these assimilationist strategies? Note the wording in verse 8. Vayasem Daniel alibo asher lo yitga'al befat bag ha-melech uveyein mishtav, vayivakesh misar ha-sarisim asher lo yitga'al. In direct response to the assignment of new names, Vayasem, that Daniel cannot alter, Daniel makes the conscious decision, Vayasem alibo, not to eat from the royal diet imposed on him. And as the narrative progresses, we see that Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah also join him in this rebellion. In verses 9 through 16, we learn of Daniel's audacious plan and its outcome to avoid succumbing to the king's conditions. But reminding us of Yosef's experiences with Potiphar in Sefer Bereishit and later Esther's experiences with Ahasuerus, we learn of Hashem's behind-the-scenes intervention to ensure Daniel succeeds. Vayitena Elohim et Daniel lechesed ulerachamim lifnei sar hasarisim. Hashem disposed the chief officer to be kind and compassionate toward Daniel. The chief officer is not necessarily concerned about what Daniel's diet and his companions consume, but is concerned is about the end result, declaring, I fear my lord the king who has appointed your food and your drink, that if you appear sickly and pale, and if you do not look healthy like youths your own age, then v'chiyavtem et roshi lamelech, you will endanger my life with the king. The description of looking pale, penechem zo'afim, is interesting, because the root zayin ayin pei, an uncommon term in Tanakh, appears when Yosef sees the butler and baker looking pale after their dreams in Bereishit 40. Now, nevertheless, Daniel is willing to take this grave risk with the following counterproposal, which interestingly he now directs to the Meltzal, the steward appointed over Daniel and his companions, seemingly with the chief officer wanting to distance himself, as Mitzudat David, the commentary of David Altshuler, the Eastern European 18th century commentator, points out. Daniel proposes they should be tested for 10 days. Nasna davadecha yamim asara, and given a vegan diet of zeroim, legumes, and water. And after this time, their appearances should be compared to those who ate of the king's food, leaving open-ended, and according to what you see, deal with your servants. When this challenge is agreed upon, I am sure you can anticipate what ensued. As verse 15 recounts, at the end of 10 days, Nira mareihem tov uvriei basar, min kol hayeladim haochelim et patbag hamelech. Their appearance looked better and fatter in flesh than all the youths eating the royal food. And ironically, we learn in verse 16 that the steward took the royal food and wine for himself, replacing it with legumes. Interestingly, Malbim insists that Hashem's miraculous providence ensured these youths were healthy and even fattened, even though they abstained from white meat and wine. But Avraham ibn Ezra and Rav Tanchum Yerushalmi, a 13th century commentator, surmised that their lean vegan diet, which was nutritional, also contributed to their healthy complexion and appearance. Why is Daniel willing to put his life in danger and not eat of the royal diet? Daniel's motivation, or perhaps multiple motivations, hinges on the meaning of the phrase in verse 8, Asher lo yitga'al. This verb, ga'al, gimel aleph lamid, often appears in contexts conveying the sense of revulsion and defilement. As Ralbag Gersonides, a 14th century French commentator, observes, while we often think of gimel aleph lamid, ga'al, in the sense of being redeemed, in biblical Hebrew, verbal roots can sometimes denote the opposite meaning, all depending on context. For example, In Yeshayahu 59:3, when the prophet chastises the Judeans for committing murder, he notes, Chapechem nigo'alu vadam, your hands are defiled with blood. Malachi 1:7 rebukes that lechem migo'al, unfit defiled sacrifices, are being offered. And when Ezra excludes certain Kohanim from serving in the Second Temple because their genealogies are corrupted from intermarriage, we read in 2:62, Vayigo'alu min hake'una. Interestingly, since Aleph often interchanges with Ayin, the verb Ga'al Gimel Ayin Lamed also denotes the meaning of defilement. The text does not explicitly stipulate the royal menu. What was the Patbag royal food? Ibn Ezra and Malbim, however, conclude that the royal food, which was presumably cooked meat, and the wine, had been offered to the pagan gods, in which case Daniel and his three companions who join him was willing to risk his life and not commit the cardinal sin of idolatry. Other commentators deduce that while the food might not have been for pagan worship, it was not kosher, and Daniel refused to sully himself with forbidden food. Regarding the wine, the opinion of Rav in Masechet Avodah Zarah 36a maintains that while it was Stam Yenam, Gentile wine not used in pagan libations, nevertheless Daniel decreed upon himself the stringency not to partake of it, even before this prohibition was enacted by Hillel and Shammai. Additionally, this opinion puts forth that Daniel decreed not to eat Gentile bread, and noting the plural mishtav, drinks, in verse 8, he also decreed against consuming the oil of Gentiles. The 13th century commentator of Aleppo, Rav Shmuel Masnut, in his commentary Midrash Shmuel clarifies, Daniel was making the strong statement that even permissible foods of the Gentiles should be regarded as defiled and sullied, unfit for consumption. As Ralbag Gersonides notes, food is a great social binder. Consorting with the Gentiles, eating of their foods, opens the door for assimilation of their values and religious beliefs. And as noted in Masechet Shabbat 17b, such defilement brings about intermarriage. Daniel sought to take a stand against Nebuchadnezzar's intent to integrate him and his companions into Babylonian society and culture. Instead, he opted to eat commoners' food, consisting of legumes and water. There might be an additional motivation for Daniel's rebellion. In the only other context where Patbag appears in Tanakh, which is Daniel 11:26, the reference is made to a king's supposed supporters who will make a coup and overthrow this king. These supporters are described as Ochalef Fat Bago, that is, eating the king's royal food, is also reflective of being loyal to the king's political monarchical sovereignty and authority. Daniel's decision to abstain from the royal diet also signified that he refused to surrender to the king's political sovereignty. Despite being a Judean captive, Daniel, a descendant of the Davidic royalty, refused to succumb to this foreign king's attempt to erase his distinct identity. This may have been a quiet rebellion, because presumably Nebuchadnezzar never found out that Daniel flouted his command. Notwithstanding, Daniel models for us how to act under precarious circumstances to retain our Jewish identity in exile. Interestingly, in Masechet Megillah 13a, we learn the view of Rabbi Yochanan, that in the royal palace, Esther apparently learned from Daniel and ate zeronim legumes. The four youths were also blessed by Hashem, as noted in verse 17, for he gave them knowledge and skill in all learning and wisdom, and providing us with anticipatory information that will be relevant in later chapters, we are informed, v'Daniel hevin b'chol chazon v'chalomot, that Daniel had understanding of visions and dreams of all kinds, another important parallel to Yosef as well. Thus, in verses 18 through 20, when they are brought before Nebuchadnezzar at the end of their 3 year schooling, in everything he tests them in all matters of wisdom and understanding, they stand out 10 times better than all the wise men, magicians, and enchanters in his entire realm. V'chol deval chokhmat bina asher bikesh meyem ha-melech, v'yimtzaim eser yadot al kol ha-chartumim ha-ashafim asher b'chol malchuto. To conclude, let us relate to the Midrash Tanchuma Parashat Vayera 21, which pays attention to the pointed reference to the number 10 in this narrative and associates it with the 10 tests of Avraham Avinu, but with a clear and important distinction. As it teaches, Observe the difference between the earlier and later generations. Earlier generations were tested by Hashem, as it is said, and Hashem tested Avraham in Bereshit chapter 22. Similarly with the generation of the wilderness. But later generations were tested by the nations of the world. Elaborating on the dialogue between Daniel and the chief officer, the Midrash recounts that the Babylonian retorts, "You, who are descended from nobility, can withstand the test of 10 days without royal food or wine?" And Daniel and his companions replied, "Yes, indeed, for we are the descendants of that righteous man who was tried 10 times. Perhaps his merit will assist us." The last verse of this chapter summarizes that Daniel lived a long life when as a consistent presence in the royal courts through the first year of the Persian king Cyrus the Great, 539 BCE, an important dating, for it is in this year that the Jews were given license to return to Jerusalem to rebuild the Second Temple. This shiur is dedicated by Arlene and Arthur Ice and Michelle and Dove Schwartz and families. Le'ilui Nishmat, our beloved and much missed father, William T. Steinlauf, Tritel Ze'ev Ben Baruch, on his 25th Yortzeit. His love of Hashem, Torah, community, and family has served us as an inspiration and guide for his children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren.